And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It is Friday, November 17th, 2017. Thank goodness it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday. It's also the peak of the Leonids meteor shower, for those of you who are out before sunrise in the morning. See some of those shooting stars overhead. We have got a lot of stuff to talk about today. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone when you call on in. And, of course, in hour number three today, the lovely Lady Claire will be joining us with her unique perspective on the world here. So let's get right on into the news. Now, back when Donald Trump was talking about the possibility that our elections might be tampered with or rigged, and everybody's saying, oh, it could never happen. Obama was saying it's too complex, couldn't possibly happen. And Hillary Clinton was out there saying, oh, it's a horrifying idea. Then, of course, Hillary lost, and immediately it changed around. Oh, of course the election was rigged. Russia rigged it. And apparently Hillary Clinton is now back out there claiming that Russia stole the election from her and gave it to Donald Trump. And again, pushing this story with absolutely zero evidence about it. And she's upping the ante, saying that there's no question that Russia changed the outcome of the general election last year for the presidency. And so they're back to pushing this nonsense. And for somebody who claimed that she wasn't planning on ever running for office again, she certainly sounds like she still wants that Oval Office by hook or by crook. Now, getting on to the issue of Judge Roy Moore, he's starting to go on the offensive. He's taking the initiative, and he's out there saying that all of this smear job is an effort by Mitch McConnell to steal the election, because apparently McConnell was backing another GOP candidate in the Alabama Senate race that Judge Roy Moore defeated. And Mitch is apparently very unhappy. The concern appears to be that Judge Roy Moore, being kind of an independent outsider, he might cast swing votes and offset John McCain, who's supposed to be a Republican but tends to side with the Democrats more and more these days. Now, Roy Moore's lawyer is out there saying it is pretty obvious at this point that the yearbook inscription is forged. And basically, the issue that they have raised is the fact that after the Roy Moore in the yearbook, there are the letters D.A., which was explained to us as meaning district attorney. And he wasn't a district attorney at the time. He was an assistant district attorney at the time. But it turns out it's got nothing to do with his job, because when he was on the bench and he would be writing out legal orders, his assistant would be required to initial after the name so that they knew who processed it. And Judge Moore's assistant in this divorce case that involved Ms. Nelson was Delbert Adams, hence the DA. So it is very obvious that that inscription in the yearbook was copied from some of the legal papers from Ms. Nelson's divorce action. Now, remember, initially she said that after Moore harassed her, that she never met him again. But that's not true. He was the presiding judge in Nelson's divorce action, which she lost, by the way. She didn't get what she wanted. So this is her little bit of payback. And again, we posted the photo of the actual inscription in the yearbook. And if you look very carefully, it's obvious that starting with the word Moore, it's a different colored ink. So somebody found an inscription in the yearbook that was simply signed Roy, that sounded very romantic and flirtatious, and then they added the rest after it. Now, as you know, Gloria Allred has been asked repeatedly whether the inscription is authentic or not, and she won't answer one way or the other, which is telling you an awful lot right there. And now it's gotten even worse, because yesterday on MSNBC's MTP Daily, basically she was asked, did Nelson actually see Roy Moore sign the yearbook? And Allred said, I didn't ask. She didn't even ask her client if the client had seen Roy Moore sign the yearbook. So at this point, that whole inscription, that yearbook inscription, is down in flames. And again, if you have got real evidence of wrongdoing, if there was real evidence out there of Judge Roy Moore sexually assaulting and harassing underage girls 30 years ago, then you don't dare engage in a fraud, because if the fraud is discovered, as has been in this case, it discredits all the other claims. And so once you detect a fraud, you know it's all fraud. Now, John McCain is still out there, even though the Senate is split almost 50-50, Democrat and GOP. He's still out there on the warpath against Judge Roy Moore, even though he knows that will give Alabama's Senate seat to a Democrat and narrow that gap to a single vote in the Senate. It's moving the Democrats one step closer to having the votes to impeach Donald Trump. And so basically McCain is double-crossing Trump. Maybe he's a sore loser because he's tried for the presidency twice and didn't get there. They all want him gone. They all want him gone because he's not part of the clique. He's not part of the club. He's not part of the narcocracy. He can't be trusted to keep cover-ups on things that need to be covered up here. We're going to do a shout-out now to our honor affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. And I really... On one hand, I don't like the fact of all these sexual allegations coming on out because it is distracting from Uranium Gate, Dossier Gate, Primary Gate, and we're being conditized. But on the other hand, there's a curtain being pulled back on Washington, D.C., and what kind of people are in our government. And I think that's a good thing for the American people to see. And this may turn out to be the year of the grand disillusionment, disillusionment in Hollywood celebrities, disillusionment in our politicians, and really come to understand these are some very scummy people for the most part. There are a few rare exceptions, like Cynthia McKinney, Ron Paul, so forth. But if you look at the number of sexual harassment claims that have been settled out of court in the Congress, and they actually posted the numbers, I think the worst year was 2006, they had something like 24. That's one every 2 weeks. They spent huge amounts of your tax money, not the Congress critters' tax money, or the Congress critters' money. The Congress critters were not required to pay the settlements to these people that they harassed. They came out of your pocket here. Now, interestingly enough, it's fun sort of kind of watching the difference in treatment between Judge Roy Moore, for whom there's actually no evidence supporting any of these allegations, and Al Franken, where there are photos and videos of him groping and grabbing women all over the place. And yet, CNN and NBC, they're defending Al Franken. Oh, it was nothing. He's being a comedian. It's no big deal. So, again, we're seeing that the corporate media establishment is still very liberal. They're out there to protect Democrats and liberals. They're out there to attack conservatives and Republicans. Now, Politico is out there saying that Al Franken's rush to have a hearing before the Senate Ethics Committee is a sham. It's a fraud because the Senate Ethics Committee is a place where ethics complaints about senators go to die. And they'll say, yes, we've had a hearing, and, well, we didn't really find anything. It's the whitewash. It's where they bury these things and make them go away. So let's get away from all the sexual dalliances here, if you will, and get on back to the important scandals. And we're seeing more and more hue and cry, even within some parts of the corporate media, saying it is time to have investigations into these various scandals, such as Uranium One. Even the New York Post is out there saying the Justice Department has a duty to consider a probe of the Uranium One sale. Actually, not even consider it. There's enough evidence there to move forward with a full-blown investigation and prosecutions, because the FBI knew there was bribery and coercion going on, and Hillary and her associates still signed off on the deal, including some people who are now working in Robert Mueller's office trying to go after Donald Trump. There's an infinite amount more evidence regarding the Uranium Gate, Russia Gate, rather Dossier Gate, Primary Gate, than there is about Russian Trump collusion. And we're starting to see more and more GOP members of Congress saying that Sessions either investigate a full, legitimate, open investigation, or he should step down and we need an attorney general who will actually do the job. And I still think Larry Klayman would be perfect for the job. Now, Hillary is obviously very worried about the Uranium One investigation. She's out there saying it's an abuse of power. One of the most ridiculous claims that came on out from the liberals is that traditionally you don't go after the losers of a campaign with criminal prosecutions. And that's absolutely nonsense. Under the United States and our system, if you break the law, you're supposed to be investigated, charged, tried, and if convicted, you go to jail. There's no get out of jail free card for you just because you're a loser, Hillary. Now, the author of the Clinton Cash book, which really cranked up a lot of this public awareness about just how corrupt the Clintons are, basically says that there are tapes existing of Hillary Clinton dealing with Russia. And he says they're damning. There's evidence out there. It's starting to surface. Now, the other day, we were talking about how the secret informant that the FBI had had inside the uranium deal had been named in an interview with Reuters. And basically, his name is William D. Campbell. And I kind of wondered at the time why, knowing the long history of dead bodies behind the Clintons, that he would do an interview with Reuters and go public with his name. As it turns out, it actually didn't work that way. Apparently, Reuters got the name from Jeff Sessions' Department of Justice. They leaked his name just a week before testifying against the Clinton crime family in the Uranium One hearings. And Sessions may have just gotten this man suicided. So I understand that he is in fear for his life and he needs to be taking precautions, because people who have incriminating information on the Clintons have a bad habit of dying in small plane wrecks, or in the case of Ron Brown, big plane wrecks, or winding up dead in Fort Marcy Park, being suicided, shot multiple times. Now, this FBI informant is saying that he's got videos of briefcases full of money that were being handed back and forth to facilitate the deal. And I hope he has them in a secure place, and I hope he has multiple copies of them. Because you know the Clintons' henchmen are out there hunting for this guy and his evidence, and they're loaded for bear. I wouldn't want to be carrying the life insurance on this guy right now. Meanwhile, over at Judicial Watch, they have released 109 pages of new Hillary Clinton emails from her tenure as Secretary of State, some of which are classified. Remember, there wasn't supposed to be any classified information on her email server, and everything was supposed to have been turned over to congressional investigators a long time ago. And, oh, gee whiz, we forgot about that. And these documents include comments about supporting the Libyan rebels and Hamas PLO talks. But again, Hillary just was not playing by the rules. Now, again, former FBI Director James Comey tried to excuse it, saying she didn't mean to do wrong. But again, if you read Title 18, intent is not required. But they're all trying to protect her and cover up for her. Remember when she did that interview on Mother Jones, and she said, if I'm charged, terrible things will happen. She's in a position to literally blackmail the entire deep state over their links to gun running, drug running, CIA, and all the rest of it. The Clintons know where all the dead bodies are buried and how they got to be dead bodies. And Hillary, we have seen indications before that she sent out the message. If she goes down, she's going to take everybody else with her. Which might be a good thing, because this government is headed toward a Soviet Union-style collapse. Now, as you know, New Jersey Senator Menendez is celebrating the fact that he's off the hook. He had a mistrial, and so far no word of a retry. And he's out there saying this was all wrong. And now he's saying that the only reason the FBI investigated him was because he's Latino. And he's out there playing the race card. I didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't corrupt. They just went after me because I'm a Latino. They're a bunch of racists over at the FBI. And talk about hypocrisy and comeuppance. Wes Goodman is a Republican state legislator for Ohio. And he routinely touts his Christian faith, and he has an anti-LGBT policy. All of that has come to an end. He's had to tender his resignation when he was caught having sex with a man in his office. So once again, we find out that what the politicians are saying is not necessarily what they're doing in their private lives. Okay, let's turn on over to the war zones, emphasis on the plural here. Once again, Russian bombers have hit targets of the Islamic State near Abu Kamal in Syria. And again, these are these long-range Tupolev 22 M3 bombers. They left an airbase in Russia, crossed Iran and Iraq, carried out a massive airstrike against facilities of Islamic State, ISIS, Daesh, ISIL, whatever they're calling themselves this week, and basically said that all the designated targets were hit. And I think they're rubbing that in response to Donald Trump's cruise missile attack against that Syrian base where most of the missiles didn't hit the target. Now, the Pentagon has announced it is staying in Syria, even though ISIS is defeated. Now, the real agenda is still finding a way to get rid of Bashar al-Assad and installing a puppet regime there. But the Pentagon is saying that they have a right to stay in Syria because ISIS might come back. ISIS could come back, and we want to have our bases and everything ready to go. And, of course, Syria is not buying it. They're asking the United States to leave. In fact, they're demanding it, saying that the U.S. military presence on their soil without their permission represents a military aggression. And Russia is saying it is time for the U.S. to leave. They were never invited to be in there. The Pentagon is saying, we're going to stay. What are you going to do? Declare war on the United States? Syrian diplomat calls on U.S. to stop backing culprits of chemical attacks. And they're basically talking about this back and forth over the U.S. trying to get an extension on the U.N. investigation into chemical weapons in Syria. And the latest report coming out basically blamed Damascus for the chemical attack, but it's now come on out. Investigators didn't even visit the site of the incident. There was no investigation. They were simply told, you're going to write a report saying that Syria was to blame for the chemical attacks on the Syrian people. And they said, yes, sir, and that's what they did. But again, the story just did not make any sense. To find out if you are being lied to, look for what should be there and isn't. And what isn't there, what was never there, is a reason for Assad to gas his own people, knowing it would open the door to a U.S. invasion when he was already winning the war. ISIS is all but gone. Syria is back under the control of the Syrian government, except for the Golan. It didn't make any sense. The story never made any sense. But if you're a loyal American, you'll believe our lies, because our lies stand for mom and apple pie and cute little puppies, and all those other people's lies are all about evil. Apparently, the Syrian army liberated quarters of Deir Ezzor from ISIS, and they found huge warehouses with huge number of lethal weapons. We're not just talking about a few weapons and chemical weapons left around some outpost. We're talking about M16 automatic rifles, TOW anti-tank missiles, 155-millimeter U.S.-made artillery. And there were even Hummers in there, some of which were already stuffed with bombs ready to explode. If you click the link on this, you'll see a photo of everything laid out. There was enough weapons there to equip a small army. And, of course, that's why they were going on in there. We're not looking at this idea of just a little bit of weapons smuggling somewhere. We're talking about a major operation to supply ISIS and al-Qaeda by the U.S. government. And by the way, that's not news. Remember, that came all out in documents brought out by Judicial Watch and the various investigations. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, at the same time they were telling you ISIS and al-Qaeda are terrorists, they were supporting them militarily. And over in Raqqa, Syria, it is becoming very obvious that the U.S.-backed Kurdish YPG militia is not really concerned with fighting ISIS, but about capturing territory. There is still a plan to break off a part of Syria, if not Iraq, for an independent Kurdistan. So we'll see what's going to happen over there. Because at this point, from the point of view of Syria, the Kurdish militia are not allies. Not when they're trying to basically cordon off chunks of the country. Now, Turkish President Erdogan has accused the U.S. of financial support to ISIS, along with all the weapons. And he went on to say, the U.S. has disappointed us a lot. They said they were fighting ISIS, and what did they do? They gave ISIS a bunch of dollars. He went on to say, Ankara does not want to cooperate with Washington about Africa because the United States has consistently violated the agreement. That is a real problem. the United States government is getting a reputation for just not keeping its word about anything. And that's going to make any efforts at diplomatic solutions for anything that much more difficult. Now, Israel is very nervous about this ceasefire deal in southern Syria signed last weekend between the U.S., Russia, and Jordan. And that's because, according to Israel, the deal will allow Iranian-backed forces to position themselves as close as 3.5 miles from the Israeli border in the Golan Heights. But I think what their concern is that they want to basically claim the Golan Heights for themselves permanently. They've already started selling off the oil and gas underneath it. So Israel is trying to figure out a way where they can just sort of grab it and somehow make it seem like it's the just and moral thing to do. Let's take some phone calls. Joe in Rhode Island, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Michael, I really appreciate your research and you're well-read, and I really appreciate your investigations. I'd like to ask you a favor, though.
What?
John Podesta, who was the Democratic man in charge during the elections. He was on WikiLeaks, a tape that they had, and it was to do with talking to two Democratic operatives about an organization. They wanted to start an organization to undermine the Christian churches, especially the Catholic Church and the evangelicals around the country. They wanted to undermine them. And John Podesta said on the tape, he says, we already have 3 or 4 organizations doing that. I was wondering, Michael, could you find out the names of those organizations?
Well,
I would really appreciate that.
I'll try and take a look at that. But from the Democrats' point of view, the Republican Party gets a lot of support from the Christian community, those who are not Christian Zionists, of course. Finding a way to disrupt the religion would undermine some of that support for the GOP.
I would love to know what organizations those are, because I'll tell you this, Mike. I'm a Christian. I'm 70 years old now, and I've been a Christian all my life. And I've always wondered if there was government intervention in the churches in our country.
Well, yes.
I could never prove it. And here we have it on tape that there is government intervention in the churches.
Well, the government uses the churches to keep people basically where they are, you know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and so forth and so on. But especially remember Bush's faith-based initiatives, where along with their tax-free status, churches were getting huge chunks of tax money to carry out social programs that normally would have been handled by the civilian sector. And so, governments throughout history have relied on religion to help mold the opinion of the general public. In the age of TV and radio and newspapers, their influence isn't as great as it once was. But it's still a major force for propaganda. Anyway, Joe, we're going to have to let you go. We got to take a break for commercials.
See what you can do, Mike.
I'll do my best.
See what you can do on that.
And we're going to go back to the phones here. Dustin in New Jersey. Aloha. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Mike. Hey, Mike, what was the name of that airline bringing the CIA weapons from, was it Ramstein, to Turkey? Or no, Bulgaria. Remember that investigative reporter?
Evergreen, I think it was. That's one of the CIA's proprietary airlines.
Yeah, they have
Evergreen Air.
Yeah, they have it's a laundry list of fronts and company. I mean, it's amazing. Like A to Z, it's unreal, Mike. There's so many intricate webs to this, to them and. They're unstoppable.
They're actually very stoppable. I mean, Congress and the president can basically say we're going to shut you down. Of course, the last president who tried to do that, wound up shot dead in Dealey Plaza. But the CIA has a lot of proprietary companies that they own outright or they have associations with other companies. Remember, Brewster Jennings Associates was the one that Valerie Plame worked for. And when she got outed as a CIA asset, It blew the cover off of Brewster Jennings Associates, which was actually the CIA's main facility for tracking third world attempts to obtain nuclear weapons. And so when they went after Valerie Plame to discredit her husband over his discrediting of the Yellowcake claim in Iraq, they literally destroyed, at least for a short while, the U.S. ability to find out just who was tracking, who was trading nuclear weapons around the world. And we know it's a problem because, of course, paperwork exists showing that Israel was trying to sell a nuclear weapon to the former government of South Africa.
Wasn't it Dick Cheney who outed her?
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah, see, like, these people, your usefulness is up to a certain point, and, you know, they'll just discard you like you're just garbage. You know, like, I mean, it just it's a joke, Mike. Like, how can anybody support? I mean, I you know, I'm not saying, like, the underlings of the CIA, you know, they do their job, but you got that, those sections, you know, the good old boys sections, you know, like that, sections of the team players, per se, that, you know, I mean, like I said, when Trump come in, I mean, I feel sorry for the smaller group, but they should have brought in Ray McGovern. I know you talked about this before, William Benny for the NSA. He can still do that. You know,
yes.
I mean, there's people there that know the system because you need somebody who knows the system. You just can't bring in Joe Schmo off the, you know, off the docks at the fishery, you know. I mean, you got to have somebody who knows the inner workings, you know.
See, unfortunately, you know, those plum positions at the top of these agencies are usually given to, you know, campaign supporters and campaign donors who may or may not know what they're doing with that job. And very often at the top levels of our government, decisions are made without really evaluating their potential consequences downstream. And the outing of Valerie Plame was a good example. They wanted to discredit her and discredit her husband. To protect the lie that Saddam was building nuclear weapons. And apparently nobody even stopped to consider that it might actually damage Brewster Jennings and the U.S. ability to track third world nuclear weapons. It just didn't occur to them. I have pointed out many times over the last several years where decisions are being made and clearly nobody is really doing an analysis on the potential blowbacks or the downsides of any of this stuff. They just get an idea in their head and it sounds really good, and they say, that's what we're going to do. It's policy. Let's move forward.
I'm like, I want to switch gears to Trump. I know we talk
yes.
about this. I call in about all the time about the tax plan, and I know people love Trump still. I mean, I voted for him. I'm a Democrat. I said that before, and, you know, I like him still, but I don't like him because remember when he ran in the debates, he said, like, you know, basically dumb people pay taxes. You know, he knows he has, you know, he paid certain politicians off to do favors. He said that, and we know that. And, you know, that's business as usual. But, you know, with the Paradise Papers coming out and stuff like that, and, you know, with the tax plan, it just aggravates me, Mike, how, you know, these people, it just seems like they're always going to get a break and everybody else is going to get the shaft. I mean, it says, like, people who make over $600,000 is going to get 8% less paying taxes, but people who make less than that is 1.5%. But then you take away the deductions for, you know, the local and state taxes. You know, most people are going to be paying more. I hate to tell you that. And, you know, Trump's going to be saving $31 million here, another $71 million here. And why didn't they just do the $1.2 billion tax cut for the middle class and leave the corporate tax rate as it is? Because they have the paradise of, you know, all those islands to, and in Scotland and Ireland, the double, what do they call it, the double hop skip, whatever they call it. They have all these loopholes. They're not even stopping, Mike. You know, we're getting the shaft again. I mean, how many more times can people? Yeah,
well,
just,
again, every oppressive regime, every tyranny in history has made a point of destroying the middle class because it is from the middle class that opposition to oligarchy arises. And we're seeing it happen here. The Soviet Union lasted for as long as it did because they designed a system that simply didn't have a middle class to begin with. There was the vast proletariat, and then there were the elites. And they supposedly paved the way for the classless society. They built the most powerful ruling class in all of history. They even outdid the Tsars toward the end there in terms of their absolute power. But the poor are made to pay for everything, and the rich are always going to buy themselves special favors and loopholes because politicians as a class would sell their own mother for a dollar. And that is unfortunately a sad commentary on our current system. One of the reasons why the tax code is as huge and obfuscated as it is it represents an accumulation of decade after decade after decade of special favors given to certain industries, certain businesses, in exchange for campaign donations. And most people can be forgiven for not having looked at the tax code. And it really is a mess, and it should be simplified, but then all the special favors and loopholes go away, and the money junkies are never going to allow that.
But you know what the scam, Mike, Sean Hannity, all those guys they have on with about the tax plan on Fox News, you notice they keep saying it's about growth. So basically, oh yeah, you'll be paying more taxes, but you know what? It's about growth. It might help you, but if it don't, guess what? The corporate tax rate still stays at 20. 10 years later, your taxes are going to go up.
Wait
even
a minute.
More.
Wait a minute. You need to understand something about growth of the economy. Because when you have a private central bank that creates the public currency out of thin air and loans it into circulation, when they talk about growth, what they really mean is the growth in the total indebtedness of the nation, which is good for them and bad for us. They use the word growth because it sounds positive. But the reality is a growing economy means growing debt that must be serviced down the road somewhere.
Yeah, that's why I'm not an expert. And, you know, I do a lot of research, but I'm not like an economic expert. But, I mean, if the whole thing is if the consumer, the consumption, those who consume the most should get the most tax cut because they go out and stimulate the economy by buying stuff. That creates jobs, not being offshore.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, and it is amazing that our financial planners and experts in Wall Street and Washington, D.C. don't understand that the reason the economy is grinding to a halt is because the vast majority of the American people, the consumers, don't have the money to pour back into the system, to go to the malls and buy stuff. You know, we're looking at another disastrous Christmas season. We're seeing iconic retailers are starting to fall left and right. But the money junkies, because they are money junkies, because they are in the throes of a real psychological addiction, they cannot see anything beyond getting that next money fix. They really are
like
very ill people.
Having Goldman Sachs do your tax plan is having Count Dracula watch over the blood bank. Thanks, Mike.
Or like having the health insurance companies write the Affordable Care Act, so forth and so on. All right, we're going to go to Al in Canada. Aloha, Al. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike.
Hi, you're on the air.
U.S. Corp. Hi, can you hear me?
You're on the air.
Hello?
You are on the air.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, Mike, the U.S. corporate tax rate is one of the highest in the world, and there's trillions of dollars overseas that could be brought back home if that tax rate was lowered. I think it's at nearly 40% this year. So, you know, I mean, a corporate tax rate and taxing people that actually work in that corporation are two totally different things, you know, because there are stockholders and whatnot. And, you know, I mean, they put up a certain amount of cash and they expect, you know, a certain return to dividend, you know. So,
There's a little bit of a problem with that. If the corporate tax rate is lowered to match the rest of the world, that is not an incentive for these corporations to go through the trouble and expense of bringing their operations back to the United States of America. And when you look at our deteriorated infrastructure that is needed to support industry and agriculture, when you look at the educational level of the average American worker, there really isn't much of anything to work with in terms of rebuilding you know, the factories and getting us back on our feet again. So I'm afraid the cut in corporate tax rate is actually too little. It's more of a giveaway. And every time the corporations get a gift, they just put it in their own pocket. We have not seen a significant amount of investment activity on a large scale in this country that would allow us to get some of those 94 million Americans who've been out of work for months and years back onto the job.
Yeah, that is true, but you know, at the same time, I mean, you got to start somewhere. If the United States has And I'm not saying that corporations do pay that 39%. There are a lot of loopholes, and you know, we know that. I mean, the same thing applies up here in Canada. I think our corporate tax rate is 15%. I mean, we're no better off than the United States. A lot of jobs have been lost up here. You know, I saw it with my own eyes. I live in a city where the industry, like high-paying, good-paying manufacturing jobs have, you know, almost disappeared. All that's left are, you know, technical service jobs in food plants and whatnot, you know, mill writing, which you know, I am, and electricians and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, I don't think it would hurt. I don't think it could hurt any more the people of the United States to have the corporate tax rate lowered. I mean, you never know.
I don't think it's going to turn. I mean, there have been, you know, Trump has gotten some companies to say, we're going to bring people, we're going to bring jobs back to the United States of America. But it's more symbolism because the number of jobs they're talking about is just, you know, minuscule compared to the number of unemployed Americans. What we really need in order to rebuild our industry is to, first of all, we got to get our infrastructure back together, and we have got to start coming up with new ideas for new products and industries that other countries can't yet make. Because the reason these corporations have gone to these other countries is because the U.S. just gave away the crown jewels of our technology. If you go back and you look at the tech boom of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, all of that came out of the Apollo missions to the moon and figuring out how to get to the moon. It was new materials, new structures, microchips, all of that stuff came out of that. And then because we had a managerial class that was not in love with the actual idea of manufacturing, thank you, Harvard Business School, they simply said, we'll license the technology to these other countries where they can make it a lot cheaper. When Seymour Cray was designing the last round of supercomputers before he passed away, he couldn't find a single American company who could fabricate the chips he needed. He had to go direct to Japan to get them.
Yeah, well, you know, in Japan, I mean, the only reason they got built up is because they stole the American technology and the stuff they were putting out when they first started manufacturing was garbage.
Hang on. Al, they didn't steal it. It was licensed to them. It was shared with them. And,
you know,
and
I'm not really saying stealing, though. You know what I mean? It's just they basically took it. Just the
Once they have the technology, they're going to copy it off here. You need to find a book called Airframe, and it's by Michael Crichton, and it's about the aviation industry, and it's about globalism. And the story basically involves this aircraft manufacturing company, and it's being taken over by these globalist hotshots who are trying to make deals with these other countries for airplanes. And part of the deal is they get to basically manufacture the wings for themselves. And of course, that is good for the short term and the stock options and the rest of it. But that technology transfer means that in a few years, those countries are going to be able to make their own wing structures for their own aircraft. And so when you have invested huge amounts of money in developing a technological advantage over another country, you have to keep it close to your chest, and you have to keep those jobs that use that technology to make products in this country. The instant you start offshoring all of that, you've lost that technological advantage. You've thrown it away, basically, is what happened. And
your country is in decline.
Yeah,
right.
It's been in decline for 30 years.
Could you put that up on your website, Mike?
Which part?
That book and that author?
Well, it's Michael Crichton. I'm sure you've heard of him. He did Jurassic Park and the others. This is one of his lesser-known books. It's called simply Airframe. It'll never be made into a movie, I guarantee you. But, toward the end of his career, Michael Crichton, he had enough money. He wasn't really interested in getting any more. And his last series of books, he was trying to sound a warning about what he saw as dangerous directions in society. And Airframe was one of them, about globalism, state of fear, about the global warming hoax. And it's really good stuff. And it's
sounds like Aaron Russo.
Absolutely. You reach a point in your life where you don't have a lot of life left, and you've got enough money to be comfortable, and you're not a money addict, and you start using whatever skills and art that you have to try and get the message out there. George Carlin was another one toward the end of his career. Yeah. He was going to say what he thought people needed to hear. He'd make it funny so people would listen, but he was out there saying what he thought people needed to hear. And he didn't care if anybody got upset about it. And that was one of the things that I think made him truly great.
Yeah, and it was an eye-opener, too.
Yes.
Truly an eye-opener, the stuff that came out of that guy's mouth, you know, in the last decade and a half that he was alive. Thanks a lot for your time, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go. We do have another caller waiting on the line, but from Peter in Los Angeles. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Mike. I was listening to your conversation with Dustin. I actually have two topics, but the more important one is what you guys started talking about, and that's how extensive the CIA and the intelligence community and how nobody knows exactly just how damn big they are. I mean, their budget is black. It's classified. And then only a few congressmen and senators have an idea of what their published classified for them is. And then you add on the drug trade, the drug smuggling, the arms trade, the arms smuggling, the front businesses they've set up, like you were saying, Brewster Jennings and others, and media outlets like that they're wholly owned, and blackmail and shake down because they've got surveillance and all that stuff that they can shake people down. Then they've got the murder for hire. Believe me, that happens as well.
Yes.
Then you add in the fact that they outsource a whole lot of this stuff to contractors, and it's pervasive. It's everywhere. It's like a huge octopus.
The contractors are to maintain deniability, and they can say, "Oh no, we didn't know about any of that stuff going on." And you're right; the CIA does conduct a lot of off the books missions or projects, if you will, that Congress has no idea about. Congress had no idea about Operation Screw Worm out of Arkansas in the 1980s because it was illegal under the Boland Amendment and the Logan Act, and that's why the CIA was funding it all with cocaine smuggled into this country. In a lot of ways, they act like the mafia, and apparently throughout much of our history, the CIA and the mafia have actually worked together on certain projects. You had Jack Ruby, for example, was not only CIA, he was a mafia paymaster. So they think of it as the mafia with wrapped in a flag, and that's probably a pretty accurate summation of the CIA.
And I know you know that Ruby worked for the Un-American Activities thing with Nixon, but he also was an arms smuggler to Israel for the War
Yes.
of Independence. But the other thing I wanted to talk to you, which is related to that, was the UN article on Rahm Emanuel and Ayman Imran.
Yes, I saw that.
And how he helped spring Ayman Imran from Pakistan. And wanted to point out a couple of things. That for years it's been pretty much a given, honestly, by intelligence guys, that Rahm Emanuel, who, by the way, during the Gulf War, when we were at war, the Persian Gulf War, Desert Storm, he went over to Israel and put on an Israeli uniform. His father
Yes.
was an Israeli guy for the Irgun or something like that. And a terrorist for the Irgun. But at any rate,
he was an Israeli spy. Yeah, I was just going to say, he was suspected of being MEGA, which was Israel's most highly placed spy in the Clinton White House. That may be why Imran Awan was, returned for getting out of Pakistan, spying on all the House members' computers, and which means that information went to Israel.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.